1460 WVOA.
Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. The program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound. It can also be heard live streaming on WVOX.com. One can call into WVOX at 914-636-0110. But as I say each week, please stay germane to our subject. My guest this afternoon is diplomat, lawyer, businessman, and political advisor, former UN Ambassador William Vandenhoevel. And our subject is the Four Freedoms Foundation, what its role is, along with the author, FDR, who, of course, of the Four Freedoms, and the new memorial for FDR and his Four Freedoms that will be built on Roosevelt Island in the East River. Welcome back to The Advocates, Mr. Ambassador. How are you?
Hi, Richard. Glad to be here.
Good. Great. You know, as I say each week, the mission of The Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on public policy. Therefore, public policy is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. Our show, The Advocates, is most often devoted to that subject. You know, throughout Bill Vandenhoevel's distinguished career, he's worked tirelessly to realize Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt's ideals of social justice, human rights, and collaboration amongst nations, most importantly. He was born in Rochester, New York in 1930, and he has just celebrated his 80th birthday. Happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you.
Good. He attended public schools, worked his way through his college educations, graduating from Deep Springs College, Cornell University, Cornell Law School. He started his long career in public service as an executive assistant to the famous General William J. Wild Bill Donovan. Maybe some of you people remember him from the World War II OSS days. And, of course, he was the winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor in First World War with the Rainbow Division. Very impressive person. In 1964, Bill Vandenhoevel was assistant to U.S. Attorney Robert F. Kennedy, led efforts to defeat local resistance to school segregation in Prince Edward County, Virginia. He worked in the Carter administration and was the UN, the U.S. permanent representative to the European Office of the United Nations in Geneva and the U.S. deputy permanent representative to the United Nations in New York. He has served since 1955, more than 50 years, as the director of the International Rescue Committee, a nonprofit agency assisting refugees from political persecution. He's been a senior partner in the law firm of Strzok & Strzok & Lavin and is now a senior counsel to the firm. You know, Bill, as president of the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute since 1984, chairman of the board since 2000, you know, you've worked with the Roosevelt family, and they present prestigious FDR Four Freedom Medals to outstanding individuals and organizations who work embodies a commitment to the ideals that President Roosevelt expounded in his historic Four Freedoms Address of 1941. Getting to that and just reminding our audience, I've known the ambassador for a number of years, and among the individuals and issues and events we both support and are enthusiastic about are the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his critical authorship of the Four Freedoms. Mr. Ambassador, first of all, please tell our audience, what are the Four Freedoms? When were they first?
The Four Freedoms are freedom of speech and expression, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. They were first discussed by Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill at the time of the Atlantic Charter meeting in 1941. The president in January of 1941, January 6th, before the Atlantic Charter, spoke to the Congress and said that we were obviously, the world was being enveloped in war, that the likelihood is that we would be drawn into it, that the cost and the brutality and the suffering of that war was going to be incalculable. But to make the sacrifices that were going to happen at least worthy of their dimension, he said we had to create a new world. We had to use the force that would enable us to win the war, to also win the peace. And to win the peace, we needed a world structured on the four freedoms. Those freedoms that I've just enunciated, freedom of speech and expression, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Now, those words, simple words that they are, really describe and entail an extraordinary vision of the world that we live in. Arthur Schlesinger used to say that, you know, the world we live in is Franklin Roosevelt's world. Mm. It's not Winston Churchill's world, because Winston Churchill, for all of his greatness, was an imperialist and really hoped to hold together the British Empire. It certainly isn't the world of the dictators, the Hitlers and the Mussolinis and the Stalins. It was Franklin Roosevelt and America's supreme effort that preserved democracy and gave us again the opportunity not to command the world, but to lead the world, and in the process of leading that world, to tell of our values and to establish our values, which are enunciated in the Four Freedoms.
Yeah, and you know, Mr. Ambassador, it's very interesting, the line he says after the freedoms, very critical. He says, he starts, freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world.
Everywhere in the world.
This is not a domestic agenda.
He repeats that with every one of the four freedoms, so that he's inviting the world to be our partners in a new democratic society. It's Margaret Thatcher called it one of the great speeches of the 20th century. And it's the ideas of that speech that we seek to remind people of. And the award of the Four Freedoms medals, which we do every year, one year for Americans and the next every other year for international figures. And that's what we're trying to do with the Four Freedoms Park on Roosevelt Island.
You know, when President Roosevelt is generally understood and recognized to be the greatest president of the 20th century, the vast amount of academics in this country over the last 77 years credit FDR with not only saving America from collapse in the Great Depression, but saving our economic system of capitalism. You know, with regards to the start of World War II, how important was FDR's meeting with Winston Churchill at what is known as the Atlantic Conference? And what did the Four Freedoms have to do with the Atlantic Charter that came out of this?
Well, Roosevelt was very clear from the beginning that he was an enemy of Adolf Hitler and that he expected America to be an enemy. He was the first world leader to stand up to Hitler in 1933, when he became president. Don't forget, Winston Churchill didn't become prime minister until 1940. So practically, Roosevelt stood alone, denouncing Hitler and what Nazism represented. And he was repaid in kind by Hitler and Mussolini, who were forever denouncing him and, you know, pronouncing the name Rosenfeld and alleging that he was a front for the Jews and that Mussolini called him that damn cripple who's trying to lead a country. But he stood up to all of that. That was nonsense. He knew what he had to do. And so when the war began in 1939, Churchill became First Lord of the Admiralty and then Prime Minister. Roosevelt established a close communication with him. And running for an unprecedented third term in 1940, he advocated Lend-Lease, and he advocated the destroyer deal, where we gave 50 overage destroyers to the British in return for leasehold rights and various British possessions in the Western Hemisphere. Those were belligerent acts against Hitler, and Hitler saw that. Nevertheless, Roosevelt was very careful about not wanting to bring America into the war except through the constitutional process. It's extraordinary to understand that with all the wars we've been involved in the last 60 years, the last time the Congress declared war in the context of its constitutional obligation was on December 8, 1941, the day after Pearl Harbor. That was the last formal declaration of war. Roosevelt was a very strong constitutionalist, and although he himself believed that we should get into the war and that ultimately we would get into the war, he resisted all of the pressures and insisted that it be done in a constitutional process, which the attack on Pearl Harbor made easy and necessary, obviously.
You know, yeah, you know, and it's interesting how the theme of the Four Freedoms literally it traces its way through, and I think we're going to follow that. And it really becomes the basis of the Atlantic Charter, and I think the sense of the Four Freedoms was dragging Churchill into this.
Churchill was not an advocate of self-determination, for example, which he saw as a threat to the British Empire. He was certainly an advocate of freedom of the seas, which was a part of the Atlantic Charter. And the four freedoms that Roosevelt inserted in the Atlantic Charter, that was in August 1941. He had given his speech in January, and then the war began for us in December of 1941. So the four freedoms were a constant message that he reiterated in order to justify the sacrifices of the war.
Yeah, and you know, most Americans know the four freedoms from the famous World War II posters done by Norman Rockwell. They're remarkable.
They are remarkable. You know, there's a Rockwell Museum where in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and they have a Four Freedoms room there. It's a wonderful museum.
Yeah. I've been there. You know, how did Rockwell, one of America's foremost illustrative artists, come to paint and select the subjects for the Four Freedoms poster? This was very critical in getting this message across to the average American.
He was, of course, the principal illustrator for the Saturday Evening Post, which was the most popular weekly magazine in America at that time. And he visited the president at the White House, and the president urged him to use the Four Freedoms as a theme. And so Rockwell did that in the context of four magnificent illustrations, which were then repeated and copied in posters across the country.
Yeah. You know, it's well known to all of us that FDR's leadership during World War II was paramount to our success, first creating America's the Arsenal of Democracy, authoring Lend-Lease, his leadership of the Allied Coalition, and then being the architect of victory and the ensuing peace. After the war and the president's untimely death, the Four Freedoms still remains as one of our great legacies. Could you tell us how this legacy is connected to the United Nations and the work of Eleanor Roosevelt?
The Four Freedoms are in the Charter of the United Nations, which was adopted in 1945 after the president's death. The United Nations itself is committed, as Roosevelt had wanted it to be, as an instrument of international governance to the values that America represented. The democratic values of the Four Freedoms. So they are encased in the Charter of the United Nations. And of course, Mrs. Roosevelt's great accomplishment, in her own words, her greatest public achievement, was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. When you think of it, it's an extraordinary accomplishment. It's the first time that there was a document in human history that defined the universal rights of all men and women.
Mm.
And the four freedoms are in the Charter of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as well.
Now, she had a tremendous struggle over writing this, and there was opposition
to
this.
Oh, yes, there was opposition. I wonder whether you could get it through today if you tried to, frankly. Then you were dealing with the United Nations that had 51 or 52 members. And she was the chairman, but she was an extraordinary leader. Political leader. She was a negotiator. She understood the political process. She worked diligently. She had the great respect of the world as the widow of the president. And she used those powers to forge a coalition that adopted it without dissent on December 10th, 1948, as the General Assembly met in Paris.
And you know, it's interesting because Mrs. Roosevelt had a struggle with people on the UN delegation, like John Foster Dulles and others who were opposed to the New Deal from literally its beginning. And I recall that at the end of Truman's term in January of 1953, she was dismissed from that position of UN. Why did that happen? And was this disingenuous by President Eisenhower?
I don't think so. I think presidents are entitled to their own representatives. Mrs. Roosevelt had made the chairmanship of the Human Rights Commission a very important post. When she was first appointed to the delegation that went to London in December 1945 to have the first meeting of the General Assembly of the United Nations, she was the only woman on the American delegation. And frankly, as she has written and others have written, the other members of that delegation, John Foster Dulles, Tom Connolly, Edward Stettinius, others, you know, just so, well, she's a woman, so we'll give her the human rights thing. That's not important. And we'll deal with the principal issues. It turned out that human rights became one of the most important issues in the first meeting of the General Assembly. because Andrei Vyshinsky, the Soviet representative, absolutely insisted on the repatriation of all of the Soviet prisoners of war from Western Europe and others. And Mrs. Roosevelt stood up and defended them. And she was such an eloquent spokesman against Vyshinsky that people like Dulles reluctantly came to understand that she was a formidable asset for the people of the United States.
You know, when you're fighting a world war in the sense, and we've literally had three world wars, World War I, World War II, and the Cold War, you know, which existed a long time, it's not only a battle of physicality of armies, it's a battle of ideas. You know, it's concepts.
Absolutely.
Isn't the sense of the four freedoms, didn't that really describe the innate generosity and hospitality and openness of America? Wasn't that really the first articulation of this?
I think so. I mean, you know, the freedom of speech, for example, is the best protection against the corruption of democracy. Now, nobody in public life has liked to endure the slings and arrows of what the media casts against them. And sometimes it's very unfair.
Mm.
But nevertheless, the fact that you have a free press and an open media makes it possible for us to have the ultimate control of those people who we choose to be our governors. And freedom of worship, we can see it everywhere in the world. Unless you have respect for what other people believe, your own beliefs are in jeopardy. And therefore, what Roosevelt deeply believed was whatever people believe was their own business. Government should not interfere with that, and nor should we condemn one or another of the various faiths. In freedom of want, we had seen incredible starvation, and he saw a world that was capable of producing the needs, the food needs, for example, the health needs for the world. And he set that as a goal. Of course, it's not accomplished yet, but we've made great progress toward it around the world. And freedom from fear, and World War II cost the world 67 million lives. The two world wars put together, 100 million people were killed.
Mm.
We were in the nuclear age that Roosevelt had presided over the opening of. And we suddenly were in a world where the destruction could be available. So he argued in Freedom of Fear that it was our obligation to negotiate disarmament agreements and nuclear controls and have sufficient force and security of our own so that we would never, and no nation would ever, have to worry about being invaded or challenged.
Yeah. You know, you've been associated with the Four Freedoms Foundation, which is obviously based on the remarks of Roosevelt for many years. Before our break coming up, Mr. Ambassador, tell us about how you started with the foundation and how it evolved.
Right. Well, the president founded a foundation in 1939 to build a library. That was the Franklin Roosevelt Foundation. After his death, Averell Harriman and others organized the Four Freedoms Foundation. In 1982, the centennial anniversary of the president's birth, Arthur Schlesinger and I and Fritzy Goodman and others organized a centennial celebration, and in the course of that, all of the Roosevelt foundations were merged into one called the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. We have formed a Four Freedoms Corporation to build the monument that I hope we'll talk about after the break on Roosevelt Island. And that Four Freedoms Foundation is part of the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute, and it is in the process of building an extraordinary monument to President Roosevelt.
And when you first started this, you know, right, we have a minute or two before the break. When you first started this, what was the reception? And was it something, because remember, there's sort of two types of Roosevelt people. They're the New Dealers, I know, from the domestic people. They're then they're the international Roosevelt people, and a lot of them are obviously together. Who were some of the others that came to the front and were happy to see this organization come about?
Well, there was I think by the time we organized this in the 80s, there was a general consensus by historians, certainly, that Roosevelt was the greatest president of the 20th century. I remember going to see Ronald Reagan with Claude Pepper and trying to get President Reagan interested in putting in the budget the building of a memorial to Franklin Roosevelt in Washington. first thing that President Reagan said, I voted four times for Franklin Roosevelt. He was certainly the greatest president in the 20th century. So there were Republicans and Democrats who understood that what Roosevelt had accomplished through leading us through the Great Depression and through the Second World War made him almost a singular figure, as Winston Churchill called him, the greatest man I have ever known. So he's still a major force of controversy, and he's still a very much of a part of contemporary debate. As you can see in today's New York Times, on page 3, there's a wonderful picture of President Roosevelt, because they want to say that the economic problems that face the nation today, his thinking and what he did is still at the center of the discussion.
Yeah, it is almost remarkable that here today, 75 years or so, you know, after the first, more than that now, 77 years after the first inauguration, that he is the pivotal debating figure.
Yeah. He is the political figure who reflects the values that America has adopted for its vision of the future. And therefore, he is very much a part of contemporary debate.
You know, it's interesting and how prescient William Lichtenberg was in writing the book In the Shadow of FDR.
Exactly.
And everyone's been in that shadow. You know, we're coming up against our commercial break. I want to remind our audience that they're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 and live streaming on WVOX.com with myself, Richard Garfunkel, and my guest, Ambassador William Vandenhoevel. And FDR's legacy and the Four Freedoms we're talking about and the Four Freedoms Foundation. When we come back after the break, I'm going to ask him the following question. On Roosevelt Island, there are plans to build a memorial to FDR and his Four Freedoms. The design for this long overdue memorial was created by Louis Kahn, the late great American architect. Why was it delayed so long? We'll be back in a minute or so. Thanks.
Listening to America's great community radio station from Westchester, the Golden Apple. This is WVOX Worldwide, AM 1460 and WVOX.com.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Lori London.
The ayes are 99, the nays are 0, and the nomination is confirmed.
General David Petraeus breezes through Senate confirmation unanimously to lead U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan. We get more now live with Fox Radio's Jill Nato in Washington.
Lori, General David Petraeus taking over for Stanley McChrystal in Afghanistan. This could be the closing chapter for a very embarrassing chapter for the Defense Department after McChrystal's negative remarks about the president came out in a Rolling Stone magazine article. Petraeus is taking on a tough job as there are calls to extend the troop withdrawal deadline in Afghanistan. The Obama administration set the start of withdrawal as July of next year, but Petraeus and other officials say they're hoping to review that deadline. Lori?
Jill, thank you again. General David Petraeus has been confirmed to lead the war in Afghanistan. This is a Fox News alert.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy with an important word for business owners in our region. These changing times, I think, present a whole new set of problems for proprietors, for owners of independent regional companies. But with all the change, I think, comes new opportunities. And thus, we recommend highly the Alan D. Rosenberg Company. Founded by Alan Rosenberg, he's a wonderful man, as a specialized accounting practice for independent local companies. Alan Rosenberg and Company know the pressures and problems of maintaining and growing a retailer service business in this day and age. With offices in Westchester and in the city, Alan Rosenberg and Company earned their professional spurs for over 30 years now, advising large, very prestigious firms and high net worth individuals, as they're called. And they have a special understanding, thus, of smaller, growing companies, where they are today, I think, unequaled in the field. So if you're satisfied with your present accounting firm and financial advisors, so be it. But if you're looking for a little more brain power from an independent accounting practice where they don't farm it out to a computer, we suggest you call the Allen D. Rosenberg Accounting Firm for a consultation. If you've been feeling it's time your accountant, and I feel like this, spoke your language and was a little more on your wavelength, Allen Rosenberg and Company. The number is 914-722-6901 in the county, or in Manhattan, 212-382-3939. In Westchester, 914-722-6901. Manhattan, 212-382-3939. These guys really know.
Hi, this is Bill Meth. Join Tom Merriam and me this Saturday morning at 8 right here on WVOX for the Metro Golf Show. We'll talk to the winner of one of the area's premier local tournaments, the Ike, played this year at Metropolis here in Westchester. We'll also mark the 4th of July by telling you how you can become part of Patriot Day Golf. The Bridgestone Golf Tip of the Week will help you keep your head straight mentally, while the Metro Golf Show Tour heads out to the Hamptons for a visit to Sabonic. That's the Metro Golf Show this and every Saturday morning from 8 to 8:30 on WVOX 1460 AM and WVOX.com. The Metro Golf Show is sponsored in part by the Mohegan Sun, Barbados Tourism, Bridgestone Golf, Green Mountain Coffee, Zippity Doo's Hair Products, and the Delwood Country Club.
Well, the forecast for the afternoon, plenty of bright sunshine, blue skies, or high temperatures in the mid to upper 70s, northwest winds at 10 to 15. It'll be clear for this evening. Overnight, low temperatures mid-50s, mostly sunny. On Thursday, we open up July with high temperatures in the mid-70s. At night, mostly clear, mid-50s. Friday, sunshine, about 75 to 80 on Friday. Saturday, sunny, mid-80s. On 4th of July, Sunday, it'll be sunny, highs near 90. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates. I'm talking to Ambassador William Vandenhoevel, a man who's had a long, distinguished career associated with some of the great people of the 20th century, certainly Wild Bill Donovan, Robert F. Kennedy, Mrs. Roosevelt. I mean, these are giants of the century, no doubt. And we're talking about the Four Freedoms and the Four Freedoms Foundation, which he has been deeply involved with for an incredible amount of time. Before the break, I asked him the following question. You know, on Roosevelt Island, their plans to build a memorial to FDR and his Four Freedoms. The design for this long overdue memorial was created by Louis Kahn, the great American architect. Bill, why was it delayed so long?
Well, there had been no memorial to the president created in New York State outside of the presidential library at Hyde Park, which was the beginning of the presidential library system. Mm-hmm. And there were a great deal of public discussion and pressure to do something to memorialize the president as the most distinguished New Yorker of the 20th century. The New York Times had a series of editorials beginning in 1969 urging that the island, which was then called Welfare Island, be redesignated as the Roosevelt Island, Franklin Roosevelt Island, and that a memorial be created there. But Nelson Rockefeller was very interested in doing that as governor. We have a fragment of his autobiography at the Presidential Library at Hyde Park, which states, where he writes, that Franklin Roosevelt was probably the most important person in his life outside of his own family in terms of guiding his public career.
And he was an Undersecretary of State, actually, in the Roosevelt administration.
In the Roosevelt years, he was given the responsibility for Latin America. Right. Exactly. So as governor in 1973, and then John Lindsay as mayor, two Republicans came together and renamed Welfare Island Franklin Roosevelt. And Louis Kahn, one of the foremost architects of the 20th century, was chosen to be the architect of the park. It was called the Four Freedoms Park, and Louis Kahn, who himself had been part of the New Deal program relating to artists during the Great Depression and who had built public buildings around the country, but nothing in New York, eagerly undertook the responsibility. I was there on September 25th, I think, 1973, when Averell Harriman presided over the dedication. And Louis Kahn was there, and Governor Rockefeller, Mayor Lindsay, Arthur Schlesinger gave the keynote speech. And so everybody was very enthusiastic about moving quickly to do it. It was going to be built by funds provided one-third by the state, one-third by the city, and one-third by the private sector. The estimated cost of it at that time was probably $8 million. But then fate intervened. Nelson Rockefeller became Vice President of the United States, moved to Washington. Louis Kahn finished his work, did the construction drawings, and then died suddenly of a heart attack at Penn Station. And the city of New York essentially went bankrupt. So the idea for the project, the island had been renamed, and the 4.5 acres at the southern tip of the island were reserved for the Roosevelt Memorial, Four Freedoms Park. But there was no leadership or no financial resources that would allow it to come forward. When Mario Cuomo was governor, he appointed a commission headed by Bob Wagner, the former mayor, Louis Lefkowitz, the former Republican Attorney General, to review the memorial and see if it was appropriate as a memorial to Franklin Roosevelt. They enthusiastically came back with the report, yes. But then about 5 years ago, again, during the Pataki years, there was no effort by the state to do this. But about 5 years ago, Louis Kahn's son, Nathaniel, produced a documentary called My Architect, which was given great praise across the country and may have won an Oscar. As a matter of fact, it's the best documentary. In any event, that documentary reminded people of this memorial, reminded them that we had no Kahn work in New York. We had two wonderful Kahn buildings at Yale. We had the Kimball Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. We had the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California. But there was nothing of Kahn here in New York. So people came to see me, and I agreed, yes, let's see if we can do it. Mm. Well, it's been an enormous undertaking.
I can imagine.
And it due in large effort to volunteer work and very generous people who came forward. The financial crisis in the city and the state has put a much bigger burden on the private sector in terms of raising the funds. And today it's a $50 million project.
Yeah.
And we began construction on March 28th. I mean, I think those who now look at Roosevelt Island, driving by it or whatever, will see the terrific work that is going on. It will take 2 years. 200 people are employed in the process. It's our own stimulus program.
Right.
And I think everybody's now very excited that it is, in fact, going to happen. And they realize, as Jim Polchuk, one of the country's leading architects, said, that this is going to be a world-class of monument the day it's completed. And it will do for the East River and the east side of New York what the Statue of Liberty has done for the West. So it'll be an enduring monument, a cultural monument. It's going to be an educational project. It's going to be the first park in the country that's going to be digitized in such a way so that every visitor will be able to learn the history of the Roosevelt era as they make their walk around the park.
And isn't it fitting that it faces the United Nations and FDR Drive?
Absolutely.
And it really is a place that, and of course, we know that Roosevelt loved Hyde Park, but he still was a New Yorker and spent quite a bit of time in New York City.
He lived on 65th Street.
That's right.
There's a wonderful Roosevelt house that is part of Hunter College.
I know. My cousin, one of my cousins by marriage, named Terry Deutsch, has worked quite a bit on the rehabilitation of that project. Shows you how funny things happen.
Well, Jennifer Rabb, the president of Hunter College, has done really, truly a magnificent job in making that It hasn't opened formally yet, but it will in a couple months.
Yeah, there's some great stories about Eleanor Roosevelt visiting Hunter College girls in their dorm and the dances. That's a sort of an unknown story, but it's part of the human touch that Eleanor Roosevelt had that was so unique about relating to, you know, the common, I don't want to say the common, but the average person who usually doesn't have that those kind of connections.
Right, exactly. But, you know, the Four Freedoms Park is going to be, first of all, it's going to be a magnificent open space. The park itself is 4.5 acres, and then you have 10 acres that are contingent to it that are going to be planted in wildflowers, et cetera, so that you'll have a best architects in the 20th century. And this is the last project in his name that can be built, and it will attract world attention. And it'll be a fabulous venue for public events.
Yeah. How about, and how's the progress on the funding? I know it has a great deal of the funding set in place. Is there more to be needed?
We estimate the approximate cost of the project to be $50 million, and we have passed the $41 million mark this week.
All right, before we close, we're going to go to a little break. We'll give an address where people can look up and, you know, a website, because I think people are interested in this. And they'd like to be part of it, to contribute. We have to go to... I want to remind our audience that, you're listening to The Advocates on WVOX 1460 AM. We're live streaming on WVOX.com with my guest, Bill VandenHeuvel. We've been talking about the Four Freedoms Foundation, how it is important, Roosevelt Island, the new monument that's going to be there. And we'll be back in a minute or so, okay? Thank you.
No matter what your summer plans are,
barbecue,
play softball,
we're right there with you. AM 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The war in Afghanistan has a new top commander.
The ayes are 99, the nays are 0, and the nomination is confirmed.
General David Petraeus unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate.
There really wasn't much debate over Petraeus. After his work leading U.S. forces in Iraq back in 2007, most senators are convinced he was exactly the right man for the job in Afghanistan.
Fox Radio's Jill Nato. Petraeus replaces General Stanley McChrystal, whose career ended after inflammatory comment.
Stunned in the quarterfinals, he'd won 6 of the last 7 Wimbledon titles, but he couldn't beat Thomas Berdych, ousted in 4 sets, making this the first year since 2002 Federer didn't make the finals.
Fox Radio's Dave Anthony. Fox News. We report, you decide.
IRS problems? An IRS tax agreement can help you. Thousands of taxpayers across the nation have settled their tax debt for less than what they owed using an IRS tax agreement. Act now. The law may change. Call 800-614-7006. That's 800-614-7006. Yes, you can do something about your IRS problems. And yes, an IRS tax agreement can help you. Call today. 800-614-7006. That's 800-614-7006. Not all taxpayers qualify for relief. Results vary from case to case, so you owe it to yourself to call 800-614-7006 today for a free consultation. Each taxpayer's case is unique, and the IRS accepts approximately 25% of all offers. Now is the time to tackle your IRS problems. Call 800-614-7006 for a free consultation. 800-614-7006. IRS Tax Agreements is a referral service and is not affiliated with the IRS.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Do you think you're getting your money's worth for your life insurance policy? Because if you're 40 and married and are paying more than $14 a month, chances are you're paying too much. Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. And if you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free no-obligation 1-800-661-5469. Since 1995, we've helped over 1 million people save money on their term life insurance. Don't you want to know how much we could save you? 69. That's 1-800-601-5469. 1-800-601-5469.
1460 WVOX.
back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Yes, welcome back to the Advocates with my guest, former diplomat, lawyer, businessman, political consultant, and former ambassador, of course, William VandenHeuvel, who now heads the Four Freedoms Foundation. You know, Bill, you've been deeply involved with the Roosevelt Library, their home in Hyde Park, the creation of the Henry A. Wallace Center, which has been critical to the advancement of what the library does, and the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. Tell us more about the Four Freedoms Foundation, its structure, and what it does here and abroad.
Well, the Four Freedoms, it's the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute, administers the Four Freedoms programs, the designation of the awardees each year. And they, the Institute is the private foundation arm of the Franklin Roosevelt Library at Hyde Park, which is part of the National Archives. It also has a broad expanse of programs in terms of think tank discussions and student involvements and scholarships and various writings by people in the context of what the Roosevelt administration represented in history. So that is the parent organization. And I was chairman and president of that for 25 years. Mm. Now, to build the Four Freedoms Park on Roosevelt Island, we have created the Four Freedoms Park LLC, which is a 501c3 organization, and which is raising the money and supervising the building of the park itself. And that is, for those who are interested in learning more about it and hopefully even contributing to it, I can give you a website address.
Sure, of course.
FDR Four Freedoms Park, one word, FDR4FreedomsPark.org. That is our website, and you'll get great all the information about the Four Freedoms Park itself. And I hope that we will continue to have extraordinary citizen involvement. You know, one of the communities on the island that is very interested in this is the disabled community. People, because Roosevelt was such a strong and stalwart leader, they forget that he was a paraplegic, that at the very height of his life he had been stricken by polio, and that he would never walk again or stand alone again. And yet, despite that disability, he was elected governor of New York and president of the United States. And throughout the world, frankly, the disabled looked to Roosevelt as an icon because he taught them independent living. He taught them that they were not sick, that disability isn't an illness, and that there's tremendous amounts to be achieved, and he showed how that was done. So everywhere that we talk about the president and everywhere that things like the park are created, there is a part of it that will remember the fact that he was disabled, so that those who suffer disabilities can also be inspired by what his life represented. There's just so many different elements, young people, the minorities in the country. I got a letter the other day from a 14-year-old boy, a Mexican, who was living in Rochester, New York, and he had heard about the Four Freedoms Park, and he read about it, and he said, I know now that I this is my country, that this is the values that that the Four Freedoms represent. That is a country where I will gain respect and where I will learn to be a citizen and where I will have the best opportunities for life. Well, that means it all, doesn't it?
No question about it.
If we can pass that challenge and that message on to new generations, then the values of American democracy will thrive and survive.
Well, as FDR said, the Constitution Hall to the Daughters of American Revolution, Daughters of American Revolution, the DAR, welcome fellow immigrants and brigands, and some are pirates. We have one call. Go ahead, please, caller.
Oh, hi. How you doing? My name's Joe. Thank you for having the ambassador as your guest. Great talk. Just in terms of the Four Freedoms, there's a little bit of a historical what if in this. I think a lot of people, critical of FDR for his negotiations at Yalta and saying he certainly didn't apply that to the people of Eastern Europe. in terms of making the deal with the Stalin. Now, had he lived, now this is the big what if, would you have seen the general course being the same as it happened, the Cold War eventuating? How do you see him dealing with the Soviet aggression post-war?
We're running down on time, but it's an excellent question. Bill, address that, please, and I'll give my comment.
Roosevelt in the context of the Cold War.
Yeah, in other words, if he would have lived, how would have our association with the Soviets been better, do you think?
I think it would have been better. I think he understood the tremendous sacrifices the Soviets had suffered in the course of winning the war, and that the participation of the Soviet armies was indispensable to our victory in the course of World War II. Nevertheless, he had made it very clear that what Stalin represented in the form of totalitarianism and the possible oppression of Eastern Europe was something that he was very much against. And in the Yalta Conference, for example, although he and Churchill knew that they couldn't transplant our armies and put them in Eastern Europe, they did adopt the Declaration of the Liberation of Eastern Europe, pledging each of the countries of Eastern Europe that they would be independent and they would be free. Now, the Soviets ignored that commitment, and it took 50 years to make it happen. But when it happened in 1989, the Declaration of the Liberation of Eastern European States was very much in the forefront of the revolution that carried it out. Mm. And I think Roosevelt would have understood that. He was the leader of that.
And he would, of course, gone to London and Moscow, and he probably would have been able to almost go above Stalin's head to the people, because he's still a great hero in Soviet Union and the post-Soviet Union.
To this day, in Russia, I think the president who has the greatest meaning is Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah, also, I just want to say to our caller that the Soviets agreed to practically everything at Yalta, and Yalta was considered a great triumph for the West.
Great triumph. Absolutely right, Richard.
A lot of people don't understand. They're misunderstood by the northern half of Sakhalin Island and different things. But Yalta actually was a great triumph for the West, and in fact, the Soviets delivered on all their promises up until the end of the war.
And Churchill said that when he returned from Yalta and spoke to the parliament, he said this was a great triumph and will vindicate the meaning of the war.
Right. And remember, the reality on the ground is they had 15 million troops in Eastern Europe. And if you one wants to read some background of that, read Masters and Commanders by Andrew Roberts. And I'll tell you, he will describe how Churchill understood the realities, wanted to achieve so many things in terms of, Greece and Turkey and the underbelly of Europe. And Roosevelt had to bring him back to ground in terms of the realities of what was going on. You know, a quick question for you, and I want to go into some of your reflections on people. Tell us very quickly how New York and the United States and Holland work with the Four Freedoms Awards.
Well, the Netherlands, of course, takes great pride that the Roosevelts emigrated from the Netherlands a long time ago, 1648, but that Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt are two of our great presidents, and they both were very proud of their Dutch ancestry. So we established the Roosevelt Study Center in the Netherlands in 1986, which is a center for scholarship of the American presidency in Europe. And every other year, we give the Four Freedom Awards there, and we have honored the world's greatest citizens, from Mandela, to the King of Spain, to this year we honored the European Court of Human Rights and the Russian editor, who's four of his staff who have been murdered in defeat of the expression of freedom of speech. And they take great pride in that. The Queen comes. This year, the Queen and the Crown Prince came to the ceremonies. The whole government came. It was televised nationally. And so in the Netherlands, the Four Freedoms is very much alive. Mm. And they look forward in every way to supporting it.
You know, we only have a minute or so left, and just give me a quick impression on, we'll have to have another program on these giants of the 20th century you knew, people like Herbert Lehman, people like Bill Donovan. It must have been pretty exciting to be in their company.
They were great men. I mean, General Donovan, who was my first mentor, was himself a conservative Republican, but he had been a classmate of Roosevelt at Columbia Law School.
That's correct, yes.
And Roosevelt and he were good friends, and Roosevelt trusted him, and he was the greatest American hero of the First World War, won every medal the United States ever gave. He was the head of the and founder of our intelligence services with OSS in World War II. And he was a man who, a great patriot, and who gave his life to public service.
Yeah, that must have been incredible to be in his, and I know you've had some connection with the former senator and governor, Herbert Lehman, of course.
Herbert Lehman and Jack Javits was my law partner at one point in my life, and Robert Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, were very close personal friends, as well as allowing me the honor of participating in government when they, the Kennedy years. So it's been a full lifetime in terms of the rewards I've had and the opportunities of working with people like Eleanor Roosevelt.
We got Bill, we're running out of time. It just shows you that in those days when the election ended, people got together and worked on problems. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, you know, we've run out of time. I want to thank you, Ambassador Vandenhoevel, for joining me on WVOX and the Advocates, giving us a critical insight into the Four Freedoms Foundation, its work, and the man who authored it. Thank you for coming on. Again, next week, the Advocates will host Neil Maher, who has written about conservation and the CCC of New Deal fame. If you want to hear this program and learn more about my guests and their work, you can listen to the broadcast of this broadcast, the Advocates and all the others. They're archived on my website, advocates-wvox.com. Look up fdr4freedomspark.org. And thank you. Have a great day. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for joining me.